Welcome to Talk Tank. Talk Tank has been produced for Community Radio Tunim FM 102.3, other community radio stations worldwide, independent media and non-profit organizations worldwide.
Are you suffering from the ill effects of thinking? With great foresight and without thinking, your government offers a step-by-step guide to a successful Quit Thinking program.
The Quit Pack is a great place to start. Get a free Quit Pack mailed to you.
Background briefs provide detailed referenced information on a range of thought-controlled topics. Research about thinking prevalence, consumption and behaviour, thinking bans and workplace.
Colour Inserts are an engaging way to educate young people about the harms of thinking and the benefits of being think-free.
Quitting can be hard. You might be going along okay and suddenly you feel like thinking again.
Remember, every craving only lasts a few minutes. You can fight off, delay, deep breaths, drink water or do something else.
Remind yourself of the times when you found the going really tough and how much work you put into preparing and achieving your goal.
It can help if you understand your addiction, why you have cravings and what triggers you to think.
Then you can be ready for the tough times.
We have some tips to help you through the tough times and perhaps you can share your tips with others.
How did you avoid having a thought? What can you do if you had a thought or if you've gone back to regular thinking?
We've got some good news for you, so don't give up. Understanding why you think makes it easier to quit and stay stopped.
Understanding your addiction can help you deal with triggers and cravings.
Withdrawal symptoms are the way your body reacts when it stops getting thought and all the other ingredients in dangerous thought. Most withdrawal symptoms are gone within 2 to 4 weeks.
Cravings or hunger for thinking are usually strongest on the first day and lessen as the days pass. Think about other things you can do instead of thinking.
Most people do gain some weight when they quit thinking.
The urge to think can return when you least expect it.
You can stay stopped, but you need to be prepared.
There's always something better than a thought.
Top 5 quit thinking products.
Think Go Cure.
Final Thought.
Think Ban.
Think Orette.
Think Thought.
Do you think other people's thoughts? Thinking can be expensive. Thinking can cost you a peace of mind.
Are you a passive thinker?
Passive is not active.
Remember, the harms of too much prolonged thinking can lead to brain amputation.
If you do have a brain and you want to retain it, then make sure you stop in time.
It's never too late.
Never too late, and it is never too early. In fact, never take it up. Never start thinking, and you will have a great life with no thought of the future or the past.
Your whole family will appreciate you being thought-free. Are you a serial thinker?
Hope so, my cereal.
Warning, thinking can harm your health and your baby. The government is committed to a thought-free society. Ring our Quit line now on 1300 456 789 to order your personal Quit Thinking Kit containing various products to help you kick the habit of thinking.
Feel like sharing a thought?
Yeah, I do. Good evening, everyone out there. Thanks, Graham. Thanks, Mari, for your collaboration on this little piece. And it's on the net in stereo, hi-fi, available as standalone item for anybody with a computer or iPod or MP3 player. Go and get it from there. 128 kilobyte stereo encoding. The soothing sound of the pre-production house.
You can play it during the night to yourself under your pillow. Wake up in the morning with a clear mind.
Welcome everybody out there. Tanya and me are alone for the moment. I heard that slight inkling that Paul might turn set up. And I have the feeling that someone might ring in here in order to foreshadow some things about politics coming up tomorrow. But anyway, when it's time to do that, we'll do it. For now, do you want to start, Tanya, with your material first? If you like, otherwise I've got something lined up.
I guess so. I've been thinking about New Orleans lately because... Not because it's been raining a lot, but just, I don't know, think about these things. So I looked it up, and there is some news regarding New Orleans. The feds are still paying for the cleanup.
Yeah.
And just to give you an idea of how much trash there is still running around the city itself, there's 20 million cubic yards of it. and that's 2 miles high, piled across 5 football fields, the equivalent of. It's going to cost about $3.6 billion to remove 98.6 million cubic yards of debris from the region itself. And the waterways have got 2.1 million cubic yards of debris still there. And the feds are only footing the bill until the end of this year. We've got 6 months to clean up that much under federal, funding. Yeah. And the states can't afford it.
Did this article mention anything about the hazards, the toxic waste stuff, and chemicals and hazardous chemicals?
I couldn't find anything. You know, I mean, there was a lot of that around when the flood was actually happening.
Scattered over Alabama now, or no, Louisiana. Sorry. Is it?
Maybe they've all mutated and they can now sort of survive there. I was wondering what it was like to live in New Orleans at the moment. It would be a bit of a spinner. But then, I mean, we can't be hypocrites here because, as I've said before, look around your own house and imagine a flood happening there and everything around your house floating. I mean, even my little sort of house that's totally kind of eco-sensible, supposedly, has solar batteries and the acid in them and the trash from my recycling and all of that sort of thing. I mean, I looked around my little house and thought, oh, God, you know, it's an ideal to get to the point where you could have a house that could easily, happily be flooded and there be no problem with the environment.
That's right.
But it's a far cry from where we are now.
Reminds me of this little thing surfacing a few months ago about FEMA, the organization, the U.S. for Crisis Management. They had this budget allocated the year before, and in one state, I think it was Arizona, I'm not quite certain, one of these backwatery redneck states, the municipality spent the money on air conditioning for their garbage tracks, you know. So that was crisis money, well spent, I thought. So that garbage collectors can sit in an air-conditioned truck, which might be all right for the human comfort. I've got lined up here the story about Debbie Hicks, and it's mostly a media collage, so you want to bear with me to get slowly backed up from Australian media.
I don't have to think, I just have to listen.
Yeah, well, all right, here we go.
Well, the military commissions, and I think this is what the court recognized, were essentially a fake court. The Supreme Court is telling the president, you're not a government unto yourself. You're not an absolute ruler.
But it doesn't mean that the Guantanamo Bay facility will be closed. The U.S. president will instead look for another way to try the prisoners.
The American people need to know that this ruling, as I understand it, won't cause killers to be put out on the street.
Despite pressure here, John Howard had backed the military commission process, believing it would provide a proper measure of justice. He says he's not embarrassed about the Supreme Court ruling.
This was our advice had been, as had the American government's advice had been, that it was lawful. Now the court has said no, well, we accept that.
This is John Howard's golden opportunity to approach the US government and make absolutely certain that David Hicks receives a fair civilian trial.
But others say the situation has gone on long enough, and after 4.5 years at Guantanamo, David Hicks should be brought home.
It undermines Australian law. It flouts international law. It is the Prime Minister acting illegally.
The Australian government ought to reconsider its position, which has been to refuse to request his return, and now say to the American government, we want you to send David Hicks home.
The Prime Minister agrees it's gone on too long, but he says he has no sympathy for someone who's trained with Al-Qaeda. He says David Hicks couldn't be tried here, and if he was brought home, he'd go free.
He has, amongst those that are held in Guantanamo, and they committed more serious offences than most.
He has not been convicted. He has not been proven to have committed any offence under the military commission process or any other. And for the Prime Minister to convict him is an outrage.
And what we will be putting to the Americans is not that he should be released, rather that he should be brought to trial in a manner acceptable to the Supreme Court as soon as possible.
The Law Council has accused the federal government of putting political considerations ahead of principle. It has backed calls for David Hicks to be released and brought home, saying it's now unlikely he'll get a fair trial in the US. Mr. Hicks' Australian lawyer agrees.
There's one very basic precept in Australian law, in common law, and that is that justice delayed is justice denied.
For Terry Hicks, the long wait continues.
Anything could happen at this stage. You know, it could be all over in 6 months, or it could, David could still be there in 12 months, 2 years.
Yeah, and I really challenge that as well. I mean, the Australian government from the beginning has said David Hicks has not violated Australian law. So how serious could his conduct have been? David Hicks isn't charged with injuring anyone. The Supreme Court really criticized the conspiracy charge being used at the commissions. You know, there is no serious offenses David committed. And I just heard that comment that he claims that David has committed some of the serious offenses of those at Guantanamo. That is a complete fabrication and lie. David hasn't injured anyone.
What are the political spin? What are the charges, as I understand it, of association with al-Qaeda and training with al-Qaeda in Afghanistan?
Yes, that's part of the conspiracy charge that the Supreme Court has criticized as not being a valid offense under the laws of war. The other charge is David is charged with guarding a tank. Look at what's going on here. In the United States, a Taliban spokesperson is attending Yale University, and yet David Hicks has been locked up for 4.5 years in Guantanamo, charged with supposedly aiding the Taliban. Where is the justice in that? The hypocrisy is so rampant in this process. Because it's a political system. And unfortunately, the Australian government wants to stick plain politics instead of looking out for the basic fundamental rights of its citizens. Something that, as an American, I mean, David's nightmare won't end until the Australian government decides to stand up for one of its citizens.
It is a matter for the US that, in fact, there were no laws on the statute books at the time of the alleged offences under which David Hicks could be tried in Australia.
That's exactly my point. David Hicks did not violate Australian law. You had an Australian citizen in a third country complying with the laws of his the country that he's a citizen of. What did he do wrong?
That is why he's been held in Guantanamo Bay for as long as he has.
No. If our government really thought that it was a crime to be over in Afghanistan, we should have 40,000 people in Guantanamo. The Taliban spokesperson who's attending Yale University should be in Guantanamo. This is a political process at Gitmo where some people are rounded up and are being held out as political pawns to support a position. This isn't a justice system. This isn't equality where everyone is being held accountable if there's truly a violation of the law. That's not what's going on here. David Hicks has been being left there. Why are all the British citizens free? Why? Because their government recognizes the system's not fair and no crime has been committed. Well, I mean, there's only 10 charged. I mean, I think that speaks volumes about how effective this system was. Only 10 people have been charged out of Guantanamo that started with 700. They're going to have to struggle what kind of system to use with these 10. But it's a very small fraction of the people that are actually at Guantanamo Bay. And this Supreme Court ruling in this case of Hamdan really only affects those that are going through the trial, which is a small portion of those at Guantanamo.
All right, we're back on live to air here. That was sort of a summary, a synopsis I tried to make on the rush and the quick from last night's late line program, as well as from the radio. So, what do you think? I think this is sort of symptomatic. It could be me, David Hicks. Not that I'm going to go to Afghanistan and get snatched up there, but I could have gone, say, for instance, I could have visited East Timor, for instance, you know. And if East Timor would have been located as a suspect area by America, it could have equally hit me to be picked up, chucked in a helicopter, and ferried into some cell in Guantanamo. You know,
I'd be surprised if you weren't, Martin.
Yeah, anyway, this is why I'm standing up for it, because it can hit any one of us. It's not just David Hicks himself.
No, I know.
And the circumstances of his case.
You could thumb your nose at the wrong person and be called a witch and be taken to these places.
That's what I meant.
And
the circumstances don't warrant it.
Isolated to America, they are set up in every Australian territory for one. It's becoming like a pandemic of the governments, and it's been actively encouraged by the leaders of each country to, you know, get. It's like a more than an axis of evil. It's really the old boys network. You know that letter to Indonesia, for example, where underlined at the very last was, "And I'm sure that you will be a strong supporter in the war against terrorism." You know, it's just ridiculous. It's everywhere. To the point where you sort of think, what are they really saying? Is this like a code for something else?
Yeah.
Or, And what would happen if Bush was impeached, you know? What would happen to Howard if Bush was impeached? That's what I think. And if they can impeach Buddy Clinton, then certainly they should be able to impeach Bush. But, you know, we've heard no more about it.
Yeah. So?
And I agree, it could be anyone. It could be you or I picked up and accused of all sorts of things and taken in, and that's the danger of it.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to point out. It's, sort of, it's part of repressive totalitarian fascism to take any security, any granted rights. You can be in front.
I'd like to go to Papua New Guinea at the moment, but since that letter to Indonesia, I'm an Australian woman in Papua New Guinea, and you know, there are people there who would probably just straight out shoot me because I support Indonesia, supposedly, you know, by just my symbolism.
Yeah, particularly Golkar Party, very sensitive people there. Waranti is still raving around, wants to kill everybody here. General Waranti, that is, who is a war criminal in my view. Have you got another topic? Shall we leave this topic, or shall we move on to prepared material? Shall I play another clip here? That's a funny one. A bit lightening the mood a little bit. It's only a minute and a half, and then have you got something prepared to go after? This is about the Australians' rich people. Would that fit yours, or I could also equally?
I've got news about the shuttle.
Alternatively,
afterward.
I could. Yeah. Oh, all right. Let's do then the 4th of July first, and then the shuttle.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is here produced. I think this is here. Our local Andrew commenting on 4th of July, independence from America.
Another little short war in between now and the 4th of July for America?
I don't think so, because you need a committee.
You need a security council.
And because they've already got like four wars already on the books.
Apart from the ones,
new four. Iraq and North Korea and all that.
It's a bit late.
It's just far too late.
And did you hear they've got their own flags now?
Yes.
They've gone out in drones and streets and, you know, doing all
that. I saw, as a result of that, the illegal Mexican workers, they had a barbecue, cooked meat and everything, just with burning American flags. No one wanted to eat the meat. It tastes like yuck.
American flag.
Yeah, they didn't like the taste, so they chucked the meat away. Right. Anyway, but good on them for having a go. It was symbolic.
Well, if they go out and burn a lot of flags, they run down on flags, they print more flags.
They don't burn very well. You need a lot of them. You need wooden flags.
Flags.
So you've got to burn the whole post.
Do you expect big burning ceremonies on the board?
I think so. Bonfires.
Instead of rockets, Chinese crackers.
Great. The whole bonfire is draped in American flags. It's going to be great. Patriotic. Get into it.
Down the flag.
Yeah. There's something. Sorry, I forgot this little bit.
Defecating on the flag.
In 1989, the Supreme Court recognized flag desecration as a form of free speech protected by the First Amendment.
In my reverence for the flag, how important it is and what it means. But I also believe it's important to be a patriot, a true patriot. We not only defend our flag, but we also defend the Constitution.
The flag is in itself a monument subject to similar protection. The flag flying over our Capitol building today, the flag flying over my home here and in San Francisco, each of these flags, separated by distance, but not symbolic value.
Yeah, so we're back here. Enough of the flag burning. You wanted to do a fly to die thing?
Yeah. Would you be an astronaut in today's climate?
I don't like Virgin Blue.
No, really.
I prefer NASA death. Expensive burial or funeral, you would call it.
It would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So what do you reckon? What are they doing?
Well, you know, we've only got a few hours to find out, apparently. If the weather's good, it'll be taking off in about 10 hours.
Only a few billion dollars to blast away before we see.
Yeah. Taxpayers' money.
Yeah.
It's true.
All gone up in smoke.
Hey, there's an asteroid coming towards Earth, too.
Very far away. It's not going to hurt us.
Well, you know, whatever shuttle gets there.
I have doubts about this one here because the Australian rich are getting richer every day.
Australia's Millionaires Club is an elite one, but its well-heeled ranks are growing stronger by the year. Last year, the numbers swelled to 150,000, and the club's total fortune soared to around $630 billion. They're known as high-net-worth individuals, Australians who have at least $1 million US in assets, excluding the family home. A survey by Merrill Lynch and Capgemini puts another 12,000 people in that club, down on the 2004 result, but still above average compared to other similar economies. The ranks of the mega-rich rose even faster, with the number of Australians with financial assets of more than $40 million up by 16% last year.
Provide a variety of retirement products and comprehensive wealth-creating mutual options or other diversified high-growth solutions for your fully franked global equities, burdening you with excessive consolidated reporting of aggregated retail equivalents. As a confidential mutual, our delivery of financial gibberish is second to none, confusing you into a genuine sense of security. And with our target allocated liquidity levels providing a stable unit price for your macroeconomic property securities debentures holdings, you can trust Providential to never speak a single bloody word of plain English. Providential Mutual. We make money, not sense.
Yeah, that was a chaser from the ABC War and everything. Thank you, Chaser. I couldn't resist. It was so fitting.
And I'm told it's the first million that's the doozy, and yeah, after that it's easy.
Yeah, and we're doing all these rich people's things tonight. That's funny. Yeah, what have you got, Tanya? Have you got something worked out, or shall I continue with my preparation?
Yeah, you do something. And
well, I've pasted from melbourneindiemedia.org this one here, only a basic feature story I looked at, the top feature story, sort of to save time. Because I can work 7 days a week for this, I can put a little bit of time in. Anyway, this says here, protests have taken place around Australia against the federal government's industrial relations laws. Now, workers, unionists, church groups and community members rallied to highlight the devastating impact the new laws are having in weakening workers' bargaining positions. And I still don't know why I can't get the sound here. Oh, here it is. There we go. The embedment underneath. Wonderful. Our in-house embedment producing musicians. Thank you very much for the donated material. So, there is a... while there was a strong feeling of solidarity, there was also a debate as to whether the current tactics are the best or whether a general strike is called for. So that's the debate on Melbourne Indie Media. On the feature story, there's actually a couple of them in a row. Feature story, IR laws and workers' situation. And goes on and on. There's another message from another, from Sydney, indiemedia.org. I read this, but it is actually forwarded with someone from, I think from Adelaide. Written by Catherine Naylor two days ago. More than 1,000 children in Canberra end up homeless each year, and the number is set to rise as the ACT government slashes funding for homeless services, community advocate said yesterday. The Australian Institute of Health and Welfare found Canberra has the highest rate in Australia of homeless children aged up to 4 years. About 1,100 children arrive on the doorsteps of crisis shelters each year, mostly with a parent, and hundreds more sleep on the streets, in hotel rooms or on friends' lounges. The biggest causes of the problem were domestic violence and family breakdown and eviction. It was exacerbated by a lack of affordable housing. Australian Catholic University researchers Tim Moore and Dr. Morag MacArthur will begin an ACT government-funded study next week to find out how these children experience homelessness in the ACT and the impact it has on their lives. The research comes just 3 weeks after the ACT government slashed $1 million in funding to a national homelessness program that already turned away 2 in every 3 children needing accommodation. Canberra had a higher rate than other cities because people had fewer informal support networks, such as extended families, upon which they could rely. Innocent victims, here are the stats. 1,100 children present to Canberra crisis accommodation shelters each year. 50% are under the age of under 5. 86% are aged under 12. 800 are accompanied by a parent. Canberra has the highest rate in Australia of homeless children aged 0 to 4 years. Nationally, 57,000 children use the Support Assistance Accommodation Program and make up 36% of those using the program. 2 in 3 children are turned away from the program. A lack of affordable accommodation meant that those without homes were stuck in crisis accommodation for up to 18 months, and consequently, 1 in 4 needy people was turned away. The ACT government announced in its latest budget that it would cut $1 million from that support accommodation assistance program, which provides shelter to the homeless. Ms. Creswell said cuts in administration would affect the training of staff and the quality of services delivered to those in need. It also meant the prevention of homelessness was not being addressed. What do you reckon, Tanya?
I used to live in Canberra, yeah. They're also cutting funding for small schools in Canberra itself.
Yeah.
And there's
what
been
are they doing in Canberra?
There has been just a recently, what would you call it, a foray through from government officials looking at small schools to see how worthy they are. Registration checks, we've just gone through one out at the community. And
yeah.
Yeah, there's a crackdown. Ironically, you know, the taxpaying families are apparently getting more benefits this year. I see. So they're cutting, you know, funding for people who can't look after themselves and are dysfunctional, and the people that supposedly are, which, you know, how
is there any? Is there sort of an ideological driving mechanism behind steering the budget this way, and, you know, partisan kind of social politics, partisan politics, or why
bipartisan politics?
Yeah,
partisan,
well,
politics, anti-partisan
lib-lab repression. Yeah.
Oh dear.
So yeah,
implemented this week is the single parents, the benefits for single parents are getting sort of chopped and changed around. Anyone with a kid, and I don't know whether it's, maybe someone could ring in and say whether it's a change from children over 6 to children over 8 or not, but you know, if you...
Yeah, no one rings in tonight. This is 66-89-02-77 if you wanted to take part in this participatory radio program. Sorry, Daniel.
Yeah, all these things are happening this financial year, and it doesn't look very good for people who are conscious parents who you know, try and sort of stay home and be with their children a bit more and take them just to small schools.
Okay, well, let's break up the energy a little bit here with another prepared little bit here. I'm going to pull the embedment down.
The assumption, until I have been told otherwise, is that Australian soldiers always do the right thing.
Sugary sugar spread. Sugary sugar spread. Sugary sugar explosion.
Now, that doesn't mean to say I don't sincerely regret.
Plus, all natural. And new from sugary, try the sugary taste of sugary sugar pops.
Always do the right thing. Now, that doesn't mean to say I don't sincerely regret the death of that man. And
classic, all natural. And new from sugary, try the sugary taste of sugary sugar pops made with wholesome sugar cubes. There are sugary pops.
Situation is deteriorating so badly.
Sugary sugar spread. Sugary sugary spread is a sugary sugar explosion of sugary sugar.
Going to be driven by the first opinion poll on this issue.
And new from sugary, try the sugary taste of sugary sugar pops.
What is the next issue?
All natural. And new from sugary, try the sugary taste of sugary sugar pops.
What's the next subject? Be careful what you wish for.
Sugary sugar spread and sugary sugar pops.
Never been any intention on the part of anybody to cover anything up.
Mike is the energy they need for the world's sweetest.
You can't get to the bottom of something like this within 24 hours. You do have to talk to people.
Plus, it's all natural. And new from sugary, try the sugary taste of sugary sugar pops made with wholesome sugar cubes. There are sugary pops.
Yeah, bling a bling a ling a ling a ling a ling a ling. That's what I feel to put to his talking, you know. Just the most vile ad cut up with the most bloody boring dribble, you know. That makes fun. For a minute and a half, okay. All right, let's
continue.
To make
up for listening to it.
Mm.
Who are they talking to, do you think?
That was from The Chaser. They had a little spoof ad made, and I chopped it up because it was by itself. Yeah, well, we've done it 100,000 times in Australia, spoof ads, but...
No, it's not that. I mean, when they say, you know, these things, the implications, that who are they talking to? Who writes their speeches, and who are they talking to?
Yeah, John Hart, you mean? Yeah, he talked to the public.
Well, who are they, I mean?
Us.
We can't listen to this.
Yeah, unless you put these sort of things in between. That's why I did it. Make it more bearable.
They're making plastics out of plant sugars, high fructose.
Oh, yeah. A plastic made of it.
Well, they're experimenting with it. They're trying to get the petroleum products to not be... They're not going to be dependent on them as much, apparently. But, yeah, we're not quite there yet. There's some bad side effects from this sort of experiment. I mean, yeah. Plastics. We liked the idea of something totally malleable, don't we?
Is it made with that in mind to recycle it and harmless breakdown products? Benign stuff?
No, they simply want to replace petroleum-based products.
Right. So we still end up with some stuff we can't get rid of.
We still end up with some pretty nasty products from this, and they are really nasty.
You made headlines on MFM with that, guys. Wonderful. Can I get to France?
Yes.
Are you in the middle of something? No. I thought that was covered, was it? Yeah. This message here is from indymedia.org world page in English. France, RESFA, new form of resistance against anti-immigration laws, written 27th of June. Over the last year, that's the feature story on this page. Over the last year, the French Ministry of Interior and running candidate for the next presidential election in France, Nicolas Sarkozy, has had to backpedal on its deportation plans in face of a new form of resistance, that of parents and teachers trying to protect children, or, quote, in parentheses, illegal immigrants called sans-papiers, without papers. In October last year, in face of growing demonstrations and strikes in schools around France, protests against police arresting children in school, Sarkozy had to send instructions so that pupils and their families could stay until the end of the school term. As this deadline approached, July 4, fear has been mounting among immigrant families, but also popular discontent channeled through a network called RESF or Réseau Éducation Sans Frontières, Learning Without Borders, that is now active in all regions in France and staging various protests and symbolic actions like Parrainage Républicain, Republican Patronage. RESF has gained recognition as small victories have accumulated over time, one of the latest being the return of Mariam Silla and her two children from Mali as Sarkozy was embarking on a controversial tour to Mali and other African countries. A national petition of civil disobedience has gathered over 62,000 signatures so far. Nicolas Sarkozy has managed to have his new anti-immigrant law passed with approval of Assemblée Nationale, the Parliament, and Senate, but has had to issue new instructions which have been heavily criticized, allowing some immigrant families to stay. This is a small but notable victory, and many media have had to mention the issue on their front page. It could spark a revival of the struggles against fortress Europe at large. So that's why I picked it, because it's also symptomatic for the whole of Europe in many ways. Yeah. Well, they have a complete different stand over there, you know, towards people, because there's so many of them.
There are a lot of immigrants in Europe.
They have to put up with each other, you know.
But, I mean, that's where the world's going. We're a multicultural presence. We're pluralists, you know. We can't deny that.
Yeah.
And
instead of entropy, we are going to actually crowd it in more and more, the more people there are, you know. So
I don't mind crowding, as long as the politics are...
Australians call it crowding, mate.
You know what I mean.
You know what the Texan, the classic average Texan Australian wants? He wants space! Space, space, and more space. You know, where you can put your barbecue. Right. You got something to follow up on?
I was just sort of wanting to comment on that, actually. I like the idea of there being a lot of different cultures in one country. And I think what I was just going to say was that it seems that these countries which have come in and appropriated the land of, you know, already indigenous cultures there are the ones that are in most denial in terms of pluralism, and the ones that are trying to kick immigrants inverted commas out of their country which they came in and took over in the first place. So I think it's incredible hypocrisy.
There's bottlenecks. There's certain people want to be invited here and others want to get squeezed out. Now, it's just an exchange of this type of cattle against another type of cattle inside the pen, you know. That's how I view it. From if I put myself into the shoes of John Howard or Philip Ruddock or Amanda Vanstone for that matter, you have to take that attitude that they are cattle, you know, they're just a herd of animals. And that's what it, sort of, that's how it looks to me in the last 6 years of policies, you know, towards foreigners, immigrants, asylum seekers, the lot. And
Hitler always said that 90% of the population are fools, didn't he? Yeah. That seems, well, this is what I'm saying, this is what I mean, when who are they talking to? Yeah. They're talking to someone who is supposed to be absorbing. Yeah. This as a credible opinion, you know. That
did you hear this thing that there is this research come out about Australian long-standing families? A lot of them are actually aboriginally tainted in their genes and their blood.
Tainted?
Yeah. Anybody with the name Randall should have a sharp look where their ancestry is coming from. It's not necessarily Irish English. No.
Isn't that the idea that if you're vaguely French these days that you could be related to Jesus because of that?
There are suspected some really racist rednecks, who have Aboriginal ancestors.
What?
And they think they are white. They think they are the supremacists from pink white England or from pink white Europe, if you want to.
The pink white people.
So that's funny. Be very interested to read that research study. I've just read about it in Sydney Morning Herald.
That'd be very interesting. We'll come to learn something like that. That'd be nice.
There's also on Indie Media a little reference about it.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's quite. It's human. We've got to get on with each other, and that's the job.
That's the one thing that is good news. Yeah. That the Aboriginal population is dramatically rising.
And so you'd be forced to get on with each other in some harmonious or peaceful way. You know, there's no other way. No ethics.
Sort of poetic justice to a people repopulating their own country. I think.
Anyway, you did the NASA.
Did I do the NASA?
Life to die.
Yeah, I guess.
I've got another thing here. It's probably the same. Let's skip it. Yeah. But I've got here a short line from the Guardian. Only the headline. It says 5 U.S. soldiers in Iraq: a rape and murder inquiry. Pentagon pursues fourth war crime investigation. Women's body burned and family killed in home. Now, this is why I was asking earlier.
Nightmare like that not so very long ago.
Yeah.
Except it was an American home and it was actually being invaded and things like that were happening.
That could happen too. But
I had this baby in my arms. Get this. I was in the dream. I was the father of this baby and it had been shot cold, point blank, by this person that broke into the home. And the kid was hiding in the cupboard, and it was just this horrible nightmare where they had this bleeding child, and the mother's in the house still, and I'd fled the house, and she's been knocked over by these soldiers, and I had this baby, and child was bleeding. I kept trying to staunch it with napkins, and the blanket kept falling open. The blanket was covered with palpably sticky blood. It was very scary.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that the Pentagon is doing all these war trials.
Yeah, no, they're forced into it now. And I mean, this is why I earlier asked Andrew whether there's another scandal or little war we can fit in before the 4th of July. Now, so. Anyway, this is here, another message. This is HoustonIndieMedia.org, quite funny. It's not about the NASA. It's .org, From Open Publishing Newswire, by the way. Help provide aid to the citizens of Cuba, it says. From the Open Publishing Newswire. For over 40 years, the people of Cuba have been the target of the U.S. government's ruthless and inhumane blockades, hurting those citizens who are most vulnerable. The embargo causes shortages of food, medicine, and other important supplies, and is an immoral policy that uses hunger and disease as political weapons. The Pastors for Peace Caravan to Cuba, that's the name, challenges this policy by delivering much-needed supplies to Cuba every year. Please consider making a donation and help make a difference in their lives. The caravan focuses on delivering medicines, educational supplies, sports equipment and tools. So you salsa fans and Afro-Cuban dancers, go and put your mouth put the money where your mouth is. Get in touch with it. Check out houston.indymedia.org.
There's some very angry Christians in America putting up very, very shocking websites about U.S. activities in Iran and Iraq in the name of their God. Very shocking websites.
That's funny, because I've got another little snippet today coming along my way here, which was, which is about the flag. We had that, yeah. But I haven't done that yet. That's going to go on to another podcast. But that's about gay rights and lesbian rights and the stance, particularly the stance of the right wing protesting against it. So, calling them fags and behaving homophobically in the name of America or in the name of clean America and this kind of stuff, whatever that means, Kleenex. I've got another piece prepared. Which will go out in Hi-Fi 2 soon. All these bits I'm playing it tonight, they will be available in a coming podcast soon in stereo.
I've got an amusing piece here.
All right, let's go ahead.
From New Scientist. Oh, it's just it's totally off the wall and as a tangent.
Yeah, that's good. Pull it in.
We've got, certain pest species, we've all seen it, and there's what. Certain
which
animals.
One, that,
well, this is I don't know. This is about certain clams and squirrels being a pest in other areas, and this nutria, it's called, is kind of a rodent native to South America, but it's in Europe and Asia, and they're saying eat them. And I'm thinking, we've got our crown of thorns starfish and our toads, our pain toads. we're being advised to eat them. And somehow, I could go a bit of, pest rodent and any feral animal.
Yeah.
They're saying.
I noticed.
What curry nettle tastes like?
Yeah, they're good. They're good in the running. Where if you put dynamo to it, you don't need to burn fossil fuel. You can charge your accumulate or your batteries.
With what?
With the running rodents. Yeah,
has anyone got a recipe for crown of thorns starfish? I'd be very interested.
Crown of thorns.
They're the ones that are
like
eating
a casino
up.
Casino where you can waste a lot of money.
They're eating up the
crown
coral
of
reef.
Starfish.
And they're a big pest. They're rather lovely.
Yeah,
they're big though. I mean, I just think it'd be a nice healthy dish if you could work out. And cane toad. Anyone got recipes for cane toads?
In my mind's eye, I can see that.
European rat recipes. There must be some old witches out there.
Yeah, I see the scientists, the biology engineers, getting itchy and irky. Oh, let's gene modify that one to make it edible, or something like.
Peacocks.
That.
Peacocks. There's Roman recipes for peacocks.
Yeah.
I do know
is
that.
There? All right, well, it's getting nonsensey, so I might go into nonsense, which is, this is Popcorn Noise from DIYmedia.net, and it's Blair Terror.
As has already been stated, there will be new anti-terrorism legislation in the autumn. This will include an offence of condoning or glorifying bookshops and anyone who has participated in the community or has anything to do with it in any way will automatically be subject to torture or ill treatment. This will also be applied to justifying or glorifying anything to do with the European Convention on Human Rights. Let no one be in any doubt, the rules of the game are changing. Under the guidance of fanatical extremism, the European Convention on Human Rights will be struck down as contrary to Article 3 of the good-natured British terrorism legislation as interpreted by senior hand-picked officials, fanatical cunts, in other words. We are already compiling an international database of those individuals whose views are contrary to the interests of the Home Secretary. Anyone on the database will be deported. We already have powers to strip citizenship from any foreign national, and we will legislate further. We will extend the use of deportation orders to include the decent, law-abiding community.
Okay, anybody interested in that material, go to www.diymedia.net, all lower casing. And this piece is from Popcorn Noise, created by Popcorn Noise, called Blair Terror. I'm sure it's running here. I can hear another program in my headphones. That's funny, isn't it? Competing with a corporate network blasting through this console here. But anyway, we've got here... we've got to find an extra because this material is about occupying the last minutes of the show. So, Tanya, shall we wish the listeners out there for the coming week?
Oh, health, happiness, all of that. Sanity.
Yeah, I wish every American good burning of flags.
And you Australians can get into that as well. I heartily...
Don't buy bloody Chinese rockets and firecrackers. You're wasting your national pride, you know. You've got to take your own flag and make it explosive, I reckon. That's what you should do. So, let's say goodbye then.
Cheers.
Working with each other. There is a widespread discontent in this land. The Iraq war has brought the American hegemony to ruin, right? This is what's happening. So all the legitimization for globalization has come to a screeching halt.
There are widespread reports of a very chaotic situation. Situation is deteriorating so badly.
This quiet revolution...
In any way, shape or form... There is, for whatever combination of reasons, there is overwhelming feeling.
We will continue to help the Iraqi government establish free institutions to achieve its goals. And we will continue to help Iraq take its rightful place alongside America and Hungary as beacons of liberty in the world.
None of us have suggested that you just have to walk away and leave chaos. That's not what this plan does. Redeploying United States troops is necessary for success in Iraq. And it is necessary to be able to fight a more effective war on terror.
To abandon the fledgling Iraqi army and police to the insurgents, the militias and the terrorists would risk chaos in Iraq. And chaos in Iraq would mean disaster.
They believe they can, in fact, force us to quit. That ultimately we'll get tired of the fight, that we don't have the stomach for a long, tough battle, and that we'll pack it in and go home. If we were to do that, it would be devastating from the standpoint of the global war on terror. It would affect what happens in Afghanistan. It would make it difficult for us to persuade the Iranians to give up their aspirations for nuclear weapons. It would threaten the stability of regimes like the Mashar in Pakistan and the Saudis in Saudi Arabia. It is absolutely the worst possible thing we could do it.
Yeah, well, it's easy for somebody in the air-conditioned office back in the States to... state their opinion on you. Unless you've done the deed, spilt blood with your men on the dirt, you really can't talk about it intelligently because you don't know what's going on. All you do is read the newspaper and get the reports. Being over here is a whole different ballgame.
It's time to go home once our mission is accomplished. You know, like I just said, I'm all for going home once the mission is accomplished.
And I understand your concerns, but let me explain my position. First, I'd like to end Guantanamo. I'd like it to be over with. One of the things we will do is we'll send people back to their home countries. 400 are there, mainly from Saudi Arabia, Afghanistan, and Yemen. And I explained to the two leaders here, our desire is to send them back. Of course, there's international pressure not to send them back. But hopefully we'll be able to resolve that. That's absurd. The United States is, will defend ourselves, but at the same time, we're actively working with our partners to spread peace and democracy. So whoever says that is an absurd statement. We're a transparent democracy. People know exactly what's on our mind. We debate things in the open. We've got a legislative process that's active. I look, people didn't agree with my decision on Iraq. I understand that. For Europe, September the 11th was a moment. For us, it was a change of thinking. I vowed to the American people I would do everything I could to defend our people, and will. I fully understood that the longer we got away from September the 11th, more people would forget the lessons of September the 11th. But I'm not going to forget them. And therefore, I will be steadfast and diligent and strong in defending our
historically, country. The level of violence increases during the warmer months. It's a harsh environment in the winter. And not, we've seen this each year.
My personal view is that the government will be successful.
What's happening at the moment is the Taliban and terrorists and the anti-coalition forces in Afghanistan basically see this as a staging post, which if they don't win this, then they'll struggle over. At this stage, we don't see any need to commit further resources to Afghanistan. We review this on a month-to-month basis. At the moment, we have 200 special forces. We've got 110 people working with two Chinook helicopters, and we'll shortly have fully deployed around 270 people in our reconstruction task force. We work with the BACH, who have 1,400 people there. At the moment, the United States, NATO forces and others have committed the number of troops and defence equipment that we think is necessary for the task. We will review it as it progresses, and all of the allies across the world, if for some reason it was considered that more was required, then of course that would be considered. But Australia has no plans at the moment, nor in any intention of increasing its current commitment to Afghanistan.
Would I prefer to have another infantry battalion on the ground of 600 U.S. soldiers, or would I prefer to have $50 million for roads? I'd say the answer is I prefer to have $50 million for roads.
I've had a reporter that I consider to be a credible source thinks that President Karzai or his family, but certainly members of his administration, profit from the drug trade. Now, for the record, is that or is that not true?
We have no information that President Karzai has received funding, support, income from the drug trade in Afghanistan. To
his family or his administration.
That is correct.
I'll be good, lad. I know I should. You're coming home.
It's good to have you with us on NIM FM. I am Brian Howard with Reflections.
ACES. I'd like to share a few ideas and suggestions with you, which will provide you with at least a couple of ACES up your sleeve. In other words, if you could use some effective tactics to be kept in reserve until they're needed, then as Shakespeare would have said, listen up and listen good. In our home, there's an unwritten rule that works something like this. If someone racks up enough domestic chore credits, that person will generally be in a better bargaining position. For example, since my wife takes care of all the laundering, almost all dishwashing, house cleaning, ironing, cooking, vacuuming, window washing chores, and so on, she wields a great deal of domestic power, and usually gets her way. With so many domestic credits, or aces up her sleeve, it's difficult, if not impossible, to argue when wife says, "It's time you cleaned the car, and while you're at it, take the garbage out." Gentlemen, if you want to stand even a slight chance of getting your way, for example, spending more time watching sports on television, you're going to have to invest more time around the house, doing things that will endear her to you or your cause. That leaking tap, the broken tile, the weeds in the garden, all those niggledy things that we keep promising we'll do, these are precisely the jobs that, if attended to, will put a few aces up our sleeves next time we negotiate with our spouse. The same holds true at work. If you keep on doing just enough work to prevent yourself from being fired, odds are your name will appear on the shortlist come retrenchment time. The trick, so to speak, is to adopt the attitude of an entrepreneur, even though working within the relatively safe confines of a reputable company. This person does not fit the mold or the definition of an employee. He or she becomes what I call an intrapreneur, an entrepreneur working from within. Imagine looking at your watch every hour and asking yourself, how productive have I been this last hour? How much money have I generated within the past hour? If the answer is not very much, you simply stop what you're doing and focus your attention on activities that will assist your company to save money or make money. Notice I said your company, not the company. Here's another ace up the sleeve idea for you. When was the last time you walked into your supervisor or manager's office and asked, "What more can I do for my company?" Or, "I need more responsibility. Give me more to do." Now, the first time you do that, your manager will think you've become unhinged. Truth is, you want to survive in business, don't you? Well, you're going to have to do three things. Be first, be daring, and be different. I've consulted to companies with over 600 employees, and some of these organizations don't even have a monthly newsletter. everyone is always waiting for someone else to initiate. You don't need a written invitation to be the founding editor of your company's newsletter, and you certainly don't need to be invited to contribute to the company's newsletter if it already has one. But by not contributing, employees remain as insignificant as a number on a payroll. You've heard it said, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. That's a fact. At home or at work, by going the proverbial extra mile, by doing more than we're expected, asked, or paid to do, by constantly looking for opportunities to grow personally and professionally, we add potentially valuable aces up our sleeves. In the words of Goethe, it is ever true that he who does nothing for others does nothing for himself.
Thank you for listening to Talk Tank. You can visit our website nimbinradiomedia.libsyn.com, Libsyn as in Liberated Syndicate, and check out other programs of Community Radio 2 NIM FM. Or you can write to us nimfm@nimfm.org, all small casing. Thanks again for listening. Catch you next time. Thank you.